Thank you, and welcome. Today is the 6th of April, 2010, and we'll start like we normally do and talk a little bit about what's going on in the skies. The April monthly planner is out there on the table if you'd like to pick one up. So let's just touch on that briefly. We have some gold days coming up this month, Saturday the 10th. Actually, it starts Friday the 9th at 14:38 hours, moon with Jupiter. Saturday the 10th is gold. Sunday the 11th is gold. And then it changes back early in the morning on Monday to bronze. Gold means especially favorable time to do work, to plan something important that you want to begin. Can be business, could be the purchase of some high ticket item, you know, not groceries, whatever it might be. So gold is the best, silver next best, bronze is middling, bronze is average, like an average day. Gray days are to be avoided. So we have gold days there. Then it goes to bronze for a couple days, and it goes back to gold again on the 14th of April at 12:37, moon with Venus. So it's gold for until the 14th, 15th, 16th. Then it changes to silver, gold to silver. So this is also excellent. Moon exalted in Taurus. Silver on the 16th, 17th, and 18th. So it's really pretty much from the 9th to the 18th, the middle of the month. So if you have something important that you're planning to do, to start, to begin, to sign, etc., that would be the time in which to do it. This is not based on your chart, your birth chart, your horoscope. This is based on where the planets are in the sky, generally speaking. Okay. And this is also on the website, so you can access it. Hey, Darla. How are you? Mark and Dea. How are you? Come on in.
Hi.
Hi.
Orla.
Orla, pleased to meet you. Find yourself a place. Leave your coat in the dining room. Put on a chair if you like. So take advantage. And then I just noticed also that now I'm jumping ahead here, but in May 2nd till May 14th, following month, we're going to have the sun exalted in Aries. We're going to have Venus in Taurus in its own sign. We're going to have Jupiter in Pisces in its own sign. So May 2nd to May 14th, it's going to be a fantastic couple of weeks there if you got something big you want to do. Highly recommended in that period.
Sun is exalted in Aries.
Antonio?
How's it going?
Good. How are you, my friend? The sun is exalted in Aries, Venus is in its own sign in Taurus, and Jupiter is in its own sign in Pisces, May 2nd to May 14th. Okay, so the big news is that Jupiter in the sky is going to move into Pisces, and for everybody. And he's going to move into Pisces on the 2nd of May. And he's going to remain there till the 8th of May, 2011. Now, he's going to do a quick exit for a month. November, December. Only for a month. And the dates are November 1st to December 6th. He'll go backwards into Aquarius. But essentially, he'll be in Pisces. So this is what I've written for the website. I hope it's not too long. It's only a page. You'll bear with me. I'm sure I want to read it to you now. We are entering a time of good fortune, spiritual renewal, and human benevolence. The great guru and spiritual teacher, the planet Jupiter, will enter the sign of Pisces on May 2nd, 2010. He will remain in Pisces for almost an entire year. Pisces is Jupiter's own sign. When a planet is in his own sign, he delivers his benefits to a much higher degree. Jupiter enters Pisces only once every 12 years and remains there for about a year. Although it is difficult to change people's intrinsic nature, we are nonetheless entering a time when our consciousness and awareness will expand and rise to greater degrees of perception, understanding, and realization. We will begin to ponder, we will begin to ponder to greater effect. I missed the word here, sorry. I'm editing as I go. I wrote it today. We will begin to ponder to greater effect the repercussions of our actions, and more specifically, the consequences of selfish, self-motivated, and self-serving actions. There are those who believe that if they get what they want, even though it is to the detriment of others, it won't matter. As long as I get my needs met. But we see that this is not the case in reality. And so this little bit now I put in parentheses. Witness our recent economic collapse. Self-serving behavior leads to the collapse of the collective welfare. It is worth mentioning that various governments are rewarding this self-serving behavior by bailing out the banks, corporations, developers, etc. This will only perpetuate such behavior. And no lesson will really be learned. They will simply think they got away with it and do it again as soon as another opportunity presents itself. End of parentheses. Jupiter in Pisces allows us to see with our hearts and to feel with our eyes. It is certain to open the hearts and minds of humanity. It is a return to innocence and purity of intent. It inspires us to question our motives and motivations and our purpose behind our behavior and our actions. Pisces is symbolized by the vast ocean of the subconscious. One's real beliefs, true nature, childhood wounds, and trust issues all reside in the dark ocean of the subconscious. These will bubble up to the surface for examination, for emotional recognition, and most importantly, for release. Jupiter in Pisces leads to freedom from the shackles of greed, fear, and narcissism. But we have to be willing to let go, and we have to be willing to jump. Giving to others, including others, considering others, does not result in your getting less. It results in all of us, including you, gaining more. This is truly the Piscean theme. It is charity, benevolence, altruism, philanthropy, and humanitarianism. It is spiritual love and surrender. Loving God automatically includes humanity, which is part and parcel of God. It takes us to the realm of the absolute, where all things are equal. One will never succeed in loving humanity while denying God, because human behavior is too polarizing. It is first necessary to recognize the common thread of spirit running through it all. How will you acknowledge all the children while denying the parents? Pisces is the final sign of the zodiac. So a 12-year cycle of Jupiter traveling through the zodiac from Aries to Pisces comes to an end on May 8th, 2011. And what do we have to show for it? Are we more compassionate? Less greedy? Did 2009 teach us the danger of defining ourselves in terms of materialistic triumphs? Have we moved on? Are we kinder and more understanding? Is the world a better place than it was 12 years ago? If not, we are now entering the final year in which the lessons need to be learned. Otherwise, we will be doomed to start all over again when Jupiter enters Aries. Could you imagine being consigned back to the first grade in school when you have finished the 12th grade but failed the tests? Jupiter in Pisces will bring truth to the fore and continue to clean house in the churches, banks, financial institutions, corporations, governments, etc. What has begun as a long overdue house cleaning will continue. Integrity, honor, ethics, and virtue will rise like the sun in the east. Will we raise our faces toward the light, or will we return to the murky and bleak behaviors that have clouded our vision in the recent past? The celestial beings in the form of the planets are holding out the olive branch. Will we reach for it? It is our choice as individuals. Jupiter in Pisces will bring great wealth and expansion of good fortune and a downpour of karmic benefits. Will we hold our heads high and look him directly in the eye and receive them without having to hide our faces in shame? Jupiter in Pisces is for the good and the honest and the true. It is not for the bearers of the shadow and the darkness who wait for others to turn their heads so they won't be caught causing their mayhem. Many high souls will take birth in the next year. Souls of great consciousness and compassion who will perform momentous humanitarian feats in their lifetimes. It is a time of divine births and spiritual rebirths. It is a global baptism and purification. We only have to choose to participate. Let us all join hands and go down to the river. Questions about that? 2nd May. It's a truly wonderful time. This scratches the surface. And when you complete a 12-year cycle, you know, it has to give birth to the next 12-year cycle. And there will indeed be many high souls being born. I've encouraged many of my clients to go ahead and get pregnant. Take advantage. No. First get yourself a husband. Oh, okay.
How does that play out in where the Jupiter sits in people's houses, whether it's in a good position or a challenging position? It doesn't override that. How does that impact?
Well, it enhances everything overall for everybody. So it depends where it is in your birth chart. So if you have something in Pisces, if you have an ascendant or any of the planets in Pisces, Jupiter will enhance that. Wherever Pisces is in your birth chart, if you have Pisces in your fifth house, if you're a Scorpio ascendant, for example, then it's going to benefit your children and your relationship with your children and education and business enterprise, entrepreneurship, for example. Depends where we find it.
Would you hold off starting a project until the 2nd of May?
Jupiter right now is in Aquarius, which is not a bad place.
Okay.
So, you know, I would say it's not a bad time now, but it would be even better from the 2nd of May. Yeah, and I didn't say this. Mercury will be going retrograde this month as well, from April 17th to May 11th. You know, it's not the best time to sign contracts. And if you're doing anything that's mercurial in nature, that's not the best time with a retrograde Mercury. But if you can hold off until after May 2nd to do something, pardon me, if you want...
I'm looking for a good date. You just said it was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, there's. I just mentioned that from May 2nd to May 14th, we've got Sun exalted, Venus in its own sign, and Jupiter in its own sign. So,
yeah,
that's pretty good right there.
So moving house or starting a business, so
yeah.
Yes.
And Pisces is also foreign countries and foreign connections and anything foreign. Which, I was going to write more in it as if I don't have enough, but as far as I go. All right. I got a few things that I was going to share with you today. Kalindi and I went for a walk and... forget the name of the place in Ashford. Mount Usher. In the gardens in Ashford. It's south of here. They have really, really beautiful, extensive gardens with various kinds of plants and flowers and creepers and bowers and some sort of a canal going through. Is that a river? River. And many different kinds of trees from many places. A lot of eucalyptus, different things. It's really beautiful. And then we stopped and we sat on the bench and we meditated for a while. They have some benches there you can meditate or whatever. And they have Lotus Pond. It's near there. And I said to her, after I thought about it for a while, a barometer of your spiritual growth and your spiritual connection is your ability to manifest things. When you desire something, whatever it might be, it could be something simple, you know, loaf of bread. And from the time you desire to the time it arrives, how much time does it take? You can say, well, it's nothing. I just go to the shop. I'll buy the loaf of bread. Yeah, well, then it took how long? You know. And you paid for it. But paying for it's one thing. It's fine. But manifesting it, it's different. You know. And so the closer to the time you have the desire and its manifestation follows, that's how you measure it. So, you know, Jesus Christ, according to the tradition, and, you know, he would manifest things immediately. And that would be the standard. You manifest right away.
Is there anything around your feeling you have associated with the desire to manifest that?
Oh, I'm sure there's all kinds of things around it.
The reason I'm asking is I think any time I know that if I get too attached to it, it takes longer.
Being attached to something drives it away.
Yeah.
Like pulls it down.
Well, then you're trying to control. You're not gone with the universe.
Yeah, you're trying to control something. Then if you're trying to control something, then you're manifesting out of ego.
Yeah.
Not out of spirit.
Yeah.
If you're manifesting out of spirit, you're manifesting, and must be for the benefit of everybody, or not to the detriment of anybody. Say it differently. But the more you invest your ego in it, the more you're caught up in in the maze. You know, your ego should be. So, in the Vedic tradition, in the yoga tradition, they've got different things. They talk about the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, we have the Kalpavriksha. Vriksha is a tree. The Kalpavriksha is desire tree. So it's a tree, and because we were in Ashford Gardens. And I said, okay, let's sit here under this Kalpavriksha. And we'll manifest our desire, whatever it might be. It's a desire tree. These trees will immediately deliver to you whatever you want. That's a Kalpavriksha. They have them in the spiritual world. It's not to say they don't have them in the material world. It's not to say you can't
make money grow on trees.
Make what? Make money grow on trees. Money will grow on trees. It does in the spiritual world. You know, that's what she pointed out. Well, you have desires, but desires are all spiritual in nature. And then, you don't have any desires because it's already there and it's instantly fulfilled as soon as you think of it. And now the other thing they have is what's called a kama denu. Well, kama is a desire and denu is cow. A desire cow or a wish-fulfilling cow.
Lucky cow.
Lucky cow. And from the cow's udder, you don't only get milk. You get whatever. You get your desires filled. So that's another thing they have that fulfills desires in the spiritual world. And then the third thing they have is the Chintamani. Money, M-A-N-I, money, is a gemstone. Gemstone. Chinta is consciousness. Chintamani is a touchstone. A stone that you can touch and will fulfill any desire. So, we were talking about this, Lindy and I, as we walked through the gardens. And then we stopped and there was this extremely fragrant tree with white flowers. And Clindy has extensive knowledge of plants, but she didn't know this one. And I said, well, what is this? She said, I'd love to know what it is. And I said, yeah, it'd be good to know what it is. Immediately a lady walked up to us, said, hi, how are you? We didn't, how you doing? We don't know her. And I said, we're doing really well, but we do not know the name of this.
No, it didn't even happen like that. She said, lovely, doesn't it smell nice? There's three of them here. It's called a...
It's called a Daphne.
A what?
Daphne.
Daphne.
Yeah. So instantly, as soon as we said, what is the name? Somebody appeared and told us the name. So in keeping with, the theme.
Mind if I tell you a story? I think it's really interesting what you're saying. I'll try and make it short. This was last summer. I was driving home from work, and the odd time I sort of say, I think I'll have a glass of wine tonight, but I usually have to go to the supermarket to buy them because I don't really have a wine cellar. So I said, oh, I'd have a glass of red wine and chocolate. There's nothing like the combination. But I decided instead of going to the supermarket, I'd go for a nice walk. So I went for a long walk, and on my way, I found a wallet. And there was €140 in it. But what I did was, because I realised it was a young girl that lost the wallet, and I thought, oh, if I was her, I'd feel so bad because she's in the
course.
So I rang the bank and I said, tell this girl to call me, I have her wallet. So her mother rang, she said, oh, is the money in it? I said, the money's in it. I found it. Oh my God, that's fantastic. So she came up about an hour later with bottom line. amazing story.
That is day, exactly what we're talking about.
And the next day I walked the same thing and I said to myself, jokingly, if I find the wallet, I'm keeping it. I need to do something like that. So anyway, walking almost the same place where I found the wallet. And who do I see? Only the lady in her car going, my daughter's about to get off the train, the girl that lost the wallet. So the next thing, she comes along and she says, here's the girl that found your wallet. And she said, oh my God, thank you so much. I was going to buy boots with that. I said, okay, that's great. So anyway, off it went on my way.
And you told her you were going to buy wine and chocolate with it.
No. 2 days later, I met the woman again at the supermarket. And she said, this is the girl that found my daughter's wallet. I was like, okay. But I was just blown away. I thought, how is that? I'm not joking. It was literally 2 hours. I had a thought, and 2 hours later, she came.
Excellent. That's manifesting, right? She didn't organize it for herself.
But also, that's the point. I didn't think any more about it. Like, I didn't grab onto it. I just kind of had a thought, and let go. I said, I better go.
Well, that's even better.
Anyway,
That's even better. Very good. Excellent story. Okay. Clendy wanted me to tell you this story. It's a different, another story. About the cat and the mouse. That's in the Mahabharata. The theme here is the following. Sometimes we have in the world friends and enemies, or friendships and enmities. We don't want enmities. We don't go looking for them. Sometimes they occur. Sometimes people don't like you for no particular reason. And sometimes circumstance. It's usually the circumstance that creates things.
So friends for time. For certain times.
Yeah. Yeah. Depending what the circumstances are. One will ally themselves with different people. Like we are allying ourselves together here. Under a certain purpose and circumstance. It's not that we go out together a whole bunch of different places, but we do this together because of the circumstance. Like that. And what the story is trying to illustrate is that sometimes you must make an alliance with someone who's perceived to be an enemy or perceived to be contrary or in conflict with you, or might be more powerful than you, or you may feel afraid of the person, or intimidated, or threatened by the person. But circumstance might throw you together, and an alliance may become necessary for some purpose. So that's the concept. So, in a forest was a huge banyan tree with many, many, many limbs. And the roots coming down and extended. Many animals lived on this banyan tree. Some at the foot of it, many birds in the branches, etc. And some in little holes and warrens underneath. And there was a mouse that lived in a hole at the foot of the tree. That was his spot. And there was a cat that lived on a branch in the upper part of the tree. And they had lived there for some time. One day along came a hunter, kind of like a real tribal sort of a guy. And he decided he'd move and set up shop near the tree and set his traps and catch birds and various animals. So he lived away from the tree, but he'd come to the tree and he'd set his traps. So the mouse was always wary of the cat, naturally, or natural enemies. And one day, the traps had been set with leather straps, like netting traps. And the cat got caught. And the mouse looked up and said, "The cat's caught in the trap. Well, I'm kind of free to run around here now, aren't I?" So even near the leather netted bag that was holding the cat was the bait that was used. And he was, you know, caught up in it somehow. The mouse went up and stood right on top of the cat and ate the bait. Because the trap had been sprung and the cat wasn't going to do anything to him. He was so bold, he stood on the cat and ate the bait. The cat's looking on him, you know. At that moment, mongoose came. You know what a mongoose is? A mongoose is like an otter without water. Sort of looks like an otter, but there's no water. Right? And a mongoose, they're common to India and various places in Asia. A mongoose is a very fierce fighter, you know, kind of like a badger. And he'll take on a cobra. And he'll fight a cobra. And he'll fight a cobra until he kills the cobra.
Nivla?
Yeah. They're very courageous and fierce mongoose. So there was the mongoose at the foot of the tree. And he's looking up at the mouse because that's his prey. And he's licking his lips, and the mouse sees him down below. Well, I can't go down now. And at that moment, in flew a big owl up above and lit in the branches high up in the tree and looked down at the mouse. Boy. So now he's got an enemy above, enemy below. He can't go up, and he can't get down to his hole. What's he going to do? Now, this mouse was a highly educated mouse. And he had read the Shastras. He had read the Vedic texts. And he knew the science of policy and strategy, according to this story. So he knew the pertinent thing to do was to make an alliance with his traditional enemy, the cat. So he said, he got off the back of the cat and he wandered around in front of him on the branches and he said, "My dear cat, as you can see, the two of us are in a fix. You are in a leather net, while I, on the other hand, have two natural enemies above and below. I think this calls for an alliance. I will chew the leather straps of your net and allow you to escape before the hunter comes back and finds you in his trap. And you will protect me from the owl and the mongoose. I will hide underneath your belly." And he says, "Are you open to the idea?" And the cat says, well, there's a lot of dialogue that goes on. I'll skip all that. A lot of dialogue. Pages and pages of dialogue. They're very philosophical, this pair. And the cat agrees because, what choice does he have? But the mouse is taking a big risk. The cat could swallow him up immediately as soon as he goes under him. But then he'd never get out and the hunter would catch him. So you see, it's the perfect catch 22. So he goes, they agree. And the mouse scurries underneath the body of the cat. The owl and the mongoose are flabbergasted. They can't believe what they just saw. Never seen that in their lives. A mouse hiding under a cat. So they wait for a while, thinking, they're not seeing correctly. And sure enough, the mouse stays under there. And the conversation's still going on between the mouse and the cat through all this. And finally, they're tired of waiting. The owl flies away. The mongoose scurries away. And in the meantime, the mouse has begun to chew the straps of the net. Very slowly. Very slowly. And the cat says, okay, hurry up now, hurry up. Don't take so long, hurry up. And the mouse says, you know, there is a time. Every action has the right time and the wrong time so that its end may be achieved. And he says, if you do an action at the wrong time, you will not realize your objective. So, don't want to do that. And the cat says, quick, the hunter might come. And the mouse finally says to him, look, if I free you before the hunter comes, surely you will eat me. Why wouldn't you? I'm your natural prey. He says, however, he has now chewed through all the straps except one. However, if I sever this last final leather strap, once the hunter comes back, then in shared fear, I afraid of you, you afraid of the hunter, you will scurry up the tree to your place, I will scurry down to the tree to my hole, and we'll both be safe. That's what he said. And the cat became very impatient. You're not treating me like a friend. We made an alliance, I protected you. And he was going on and on like this. But the mouse, he was the educated one. No, not going to do it. Finally, the hunter comes. Looks up. Ah, I've got a cat in my trap. Dinner today. He was tribal. Not Chinese, he's tribal. So, at that moment, the owl and the mongoose came back, but seeing the hunter there, their natural enemy, they immediately left again. They couldn't stay. At that moment, the mouse severed the final strap as the hunter decided to make his way up and get the cat out of the trap. Immediately, the cat was freed and ran up the tree to his home. The mouse ran down the tree, skirting to his hole, and it all went off perfectly without a hitch. Timing. The hunter was disappointed because he didn't get his prey, his catch. He went home unhappy, having set his new traps. And a little time passed, half an hour, and out came the cat. Out came the mouse. And the cat said, my friend, come, let us spend time together. Now that we have made this bond of friendship, have worked together so successfully on our goal, let us spend time together like all good friends do. The mouse said, I think not. The mouse said, friendship and enmity depends on circumstance. The circumstance was such that our friendship was suitable, was necessary. That circumstance is now gone away. And the natural enmity between us, you being the predator, me the prey, will now be restored. So it is with a wave of my hand, I wish you a good day, sir, and I won't be coming to your place anymore, sort of thing. So anyway, that was the story of the cat and the mouse. So the point is that sometimes you have to make alliances and cut ties. Now, a couple of weeks ago, or about 3 weeks ago, it was the appearance day of Ram. And this is Ram. Here. Everybody got this?
Yeah.
Orla, do you have one?
No.
According to the yoga system, Ram is an incarnation of Vishnu, God, who is on the planet in the Treta Yuga, the Silver Age, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of years ago. And that's him there with a bow, bluish in color. That's his wife on his left, Sita, who is the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. She's a manifestation of Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. And that's one of his brothers. He had three brothers, the four of them together. And that's the brother called Lakshman. And that is Hanuman, whom they often call the monkey god. You've seen a lot of depictions of Hanuman if you've been to Asia. He's not really a monkey, he's a vanara. He's more like a man with monkey features, or a monkey with humanoid. He's also a scholar and he speaks many languages and et cetera, et cetera. He's the son of the wind god. Anyway, Ram is highly regarded in India, obviously. But when you travel through Asia, India, Nepal, Japan, China, Tibet, Vietnam, Cambodia. I'm missing a few. Bali,
Indonesia,
Pakistan. Pakistan is very Muslim.
99%.
So not really Pakistan. Indonesia is Muslim, but Bali is Hindu. So different. Anyway, if you've traveled in any of these countries and you've seen the iconography and the art and the sculpture and the dance and the music and the mythology, it is all Ram. It's all centered around Sita and Ram. Now, because it's a different culture in these different places, it's different and it's evolved differently, and it's presented a little bit differently, but it's the same story. Same story. That's how powerful this was and how far it spread. It spread actually further than that. But you can go today and you can find it. That's why I'm mentioning these places.
Japan.
Yeah, I said Japan. I think I did, yeah. So, Ram was a prince, but Ram was the incarnation of enlightened kingship, and he became king later on in his life of a city called Ayodhya. Ayodhya means indefensible, or can't be beaten, can't be defeated.
Invincible.
Yeah. And he was very, he was well loved by the people, kind, just, and treated everybody well. So, Ayodhya at that time, I wanted to read this to you, it's not very long. This is what it's like to live in a place where everybody is in a high state of consciousness. These are the symptoms. When the ruler is just and honest and not corrupted, And that then filters down through the government, government agencies, his people who run the different agencies, etc. And the people are treated justly and fairly. Then it creates a heavenly place. It actually works like that. And disease goes away. Poverty goes away. Hunger goes away. Drought goes away. All of these things are not part of the reality, because those things are symptoms of an imbalance or a corruption or something run by a materialistic, self-serving ego. Okay? So this is what it was like in Ayodhya when Ram was born. His father's name was Dasharath. So this is the atmosphere that he was born into. The people of that city were happy, virtuous, learned in sacred lore, free from greed, truthful, and contented with their own fortune. Not jealous. There was no householder, in that great city who had not stored valuable things in abundance and had not attained the objects of human pursuit, and who was in want of oxen, cows, horses, and other wealth and food. Nobody was short of anything. And, you know, the domestic animals that you would need to do different things were, everybody had what they needed. There was no person to be seen in Ayodhya who was sensuous, miserly, cruel, ignorant, or unbelieving. Atheistic. All the men and women of that city were by nature virtuous, well regulated in life. That means they also, you know, did their duty, whatever that might be. Always cheerful and faultless in character and disposition, and had the disposition of great sages. There was no one in Ayodhya who was devoid of gold earrings. Everybody had gold earrings, apparently. Probably the men as well. Diadems and flower garlands. Everybody had some sort of diadem. Everybody had a flower garland. Nobody lacked in objects of enjoyment. There was none who did not put on an attractive appearance after taking bath. No one was there who did not anoint his body with sandal paste and did not use various fragrances and scents. Everybody smelled good. Nobody was seen in Ayodhya taking food which was not offered or unholy. It says unholy food. Food in a darker mode. So food was normally offered to God first. You know, you bless the food before you eat it. Or no one who did not give alms or charity, and no one who did not exercise control over the mind. No one would be found there who had no gold bangles or no gold ornaments for the neck and the arms. There was none in Ayodhya who did not maintain and worship the sacred fire. On those days, you would have a sacred fire in your home, and you would make offerings of ghee into the fire with prayers and mantras. That was the tradition back then. And did not perform various kinds of offerings and worship. No one among them was petty-minded. No one was given to thieving or immorality, and no one was impure of origin. The Brahmins are like priests inhabiting Ayodhya, are ever devoted to their duties and exercise effective control over their senses. They gave away charity, pursued their studies, and we're I don't know what this means. I'm not going to. I don't know the intent here. There is no member. There was no member of the priestly class who was atheistic, untruthful, devoid of knowledge, or finding fault with others. No one was resourceless, and no one was bereft of learning. There was no one in that city who had not mastered the six branches of knowledge. This again is the priest, so we won't worry about that. And did not observe some sort of pious vow. There was no donor of scanty gifts and no miserable or miserly man. So everybody gave. They gave in plenty. There was none who was distracted in mind or afflicted. There was no person or no man or woman in a yoga who was devoid of splendor, not attractive, and not loyal to the king. People belonging to all the four grades of society, with the priests, the Brahmins at the head, were fond of worshiping the gods and unexpected visitors. It's considered in Asia to be very important to show warm hospitality to anybody who just shows up at your door. It's considered to be very favorable to do that for you. They are grateful, generous, heroic, and powerful. All the residents of that great city enjoyed a long lease of life and were devoted to virtue and truth and such. And because of this, were never deprived of their wives, children, and grandchildren. No one died untimely. It's considered to be very bad karma if your children die or your grandchildren die. You know, people should die according to age. You know, when you're older, you die. You don't die when you're young.
Bad karma for the person who died or the person who's
Both. Both. And well, that's pretty much it. So,
what if a person had come in and they had fulfilled their purpose young in life and died?
Well, that doesn't.
How does that fit in?
There's still grieving though that goes on for people that are left behind, so that's unfortunate.
Yeah, but that didn't happen. Doesn't happen like that in that kind of society. Those kinds of people would not be born then.
Yeah. Oh, you're going, this is that society.
Yeah, in there.
Yeah, it didn't happen there.
So, and it didn't happen there for all the reasons given. Mm-hmm. So this is the point. So, that's what it was like when Ram was on the planet. Now, you know, if you want to wrap your mind around that one, then you see, we have a little ways to go. Here.
What time was that? What era?
That was straight to Yuga. That's the Silver Age.
Okay.
So
we're in the
Iron Age. So the universe is four seasons: gold, silver, bronze, and Iron Age. Trying to remember the Golden Age lasts for 1,796,000 years. 128,000 years. The Silver Age, where Ram was, lasted for. In the Gold Age, people lived to be 100,000 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the Silver Age, the age lasts for 1,296,000 years. People lived to be 10,000 years old. And people get smaller and smaller. In the Bronze Age, people live for 864,000 years. That's the number. And the people live to be 1,000 years. In the current age, the Iron Age, the length of the Iron Age is 432,000 years, and the people live for 100 years. 100, 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 years old. So we are in the 100, and which makes sense, but most people don't live to be 100. In Vedic astrology, you know, it's 120.
And we're the shortest.
Pardon?
We're the shortest.
And we're by far the shortest. We're very short. So,
I saw a documentary on Dwarka in Western India. At the present day with all the temples, and they started digging and they thought they'd just find one layer of old buildings. They found 12 consecutive old temples underneath.
What do you mean, one under the other, under the other?
Yeah. Which would date back to when all...
The bridge, when Ram's wife Sita was kidnapped by the demon Ravan and taken to Sri Lanka, his capital was Lanka, Ram with his army, the monkey army, had to build a bridge across from southern India to Sri Lanka once they figured out where she was. We were there to rescue her. And if you see the satellite view today of that, you'll see the bridge underneath the water. You can still see it. Still there. So this is not a myth. It's a history.
I did have a high chance for years, and there was no famine, there was no war, there was no pain, and the people lived in harmony. So we have to eat him.
There you go.
Then they had the Brehan laws.
The Brehan laws.
Yes.
Because what they had the Brehan laws around, it was one of the best systems for fairness, justice, all those kind of things.
And you know, a lot of the Irish words come from the Sanskrit.
Yeah, and a lot of the a lot of the laws were decided by the women.
Yeah, women could divorce their husbands and still, you know, they might go back to their fathers back then. They could stand themselves and then also to their second husband and their grandma.
And there was a queen, wasn't there? There was an Irish queen as well. A warrior queen.
There you go. So, in honor of Ram, there's our mantra for today. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. That's quite a popular one. May God in His divine... That's my sort of loose translation, but it's reasonable. May God in His divine form of Ram be ever glorified and victorious. I call upon Ram, God in his form of the enlightened and just king, to bring courage, beauty, wealth, spiritual joy, success and victory, and fulfillment into my life. Benefits of chanting this mantra. This is a powerful mantra and may be invoked for spiritual or material purposes. It can bestow liberation upon the soul and free the soul from samsara, the wheel of repeated birth and death. It enables you to understand the difference between matter and spirit. It opens the heart and heals all emotional wounds. It promotes forgiveness, tolerance, compassion, and mercy toward all beings. If chanted regularly, it brings great joy and happiness into your life. Ultimately, it fills your heart with love of God and all aspects of His creation. It should be chanted on Japa Mala a minimum of 108 times or one round of the beats. So, you don't have the heat on you? Huh? Okay, no. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. 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 Shri Ram Jai Ram. jai Ram, Shri Ram, jai Ram, jai jai Ram. 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 Shri Ram, jai Ram. Oh, you'll be chanting that all the way home, I assure you. Watch and see.
His passion, this Ram mantra, is works on your the solar plexus chakra, and also what behind solar plexus you have, you know, the stress hormones. So when you're anxious or when you're panicking, you see Ram, 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 and the sound of that, that solar plexus.
When you're using the beads, do you sing this or do you chant it?
Chant Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram, Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram, Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. You can do one bead for each one.
Is it about getting a rhythm?
Pardon?
Is it about getting a rhythm?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always getting a rhythm. I was reading the other day about a Tibetan meditation that you do when you walk. So you take a mantra like this, Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram, Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram, Shri Ram Jai Ram. Okay, so you're walking left, right, you may not walk that fast. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram, right? So you're walking. Then you breathe in. You chant out loud, please.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram, 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 Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.
Twice along the way out.
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.
You're walking. You're breathing. Everything's done in rhythm. Now you pick a point in the distance, far distant, and you focus only on that point as you walk. And you will go into an altered state. You chant the mantra, you breathe, you walk in harmony, and you stay focused only on that point, whatever it might be, you know, end of a rock or a tree or a whatever.
And you will also go to a manhole.
Hopefully you won't go into a manhole. Or a river. Right.
Yeah, the ambulance weren't worried about
it. 999.
You went into the
manhole.
Worried about the fact
that
you chanted.
Yeah. You wouldn't stop chanting. Well, you'd have a good reason to chant. So, this is a real nice mantra. Very simple.
And the easiest, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very easy. And I invite you to...
Yeah,
it is indeed. Well, the word Ram means a spiritual pleasure, spiritual bliss. It's the Ram potency of the Godhead is the joy potency. So, we can all use a little extra measure of joy. Okay. Does anybody have any stories or experiences that they wanted to share with us? spiritual experience in your life like Shira has shared with us? You don't have to. Up to you.
Then I went to the Hare Krishna temple in Shravan.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
We've been there once, yeah.
Yeah, it is beautiful. It is a beautiful island.
Yeah. You gotta take the boat.
After I met you guys. Yeah, it was lovely. Really good people. Really.
I went really on the Sunday.
Yeah.
Sunday feast.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting. Just, it was really cool meeting some people just like good-hearted, good-soul people. Like, they didn't smoke, they didn't drink, and vegetarians. I know, but, you know, but they were just, and they also lived a simple life. Because, you know, like, I like my car, they have no TVs up there, so they just, very simple life, very good. Yeah, it's easy, you know, for anyone to be a vegetarian, not smoke, not drink, but kind of just live a simpler life yet again, and just chant, and just be happy with nature, you know?
Amen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just like, toiling the land and we're just chanting there and it was really cool.
Good.
Yeah, it was nice.
Yeah, you'll be in the ashram before long.
I have one minute story.
Yeah?
Every couple of weeks, I bring my nieces over to stay with me because it was lovely. I don't have my own children, it's lovely to be around them and then you have them for a while and then you give them back. But anyway, so what I do is I set up a big screen because I think it's like a big prize cinema. So I put up a big screen with a projector, the whole thing. So we were watching The Ice Age, and Deirdre's 6 now, she'll be 7 next week. And so we're just watching Ice Age 3, and it's this guy he wants to be around the mammoth, and the mother's pregnant. So they're kind of going, no, we've got to take care of ourselves. And your man's feeling all dejected, the character in the play. Or in the actual film. And Deirdre just says, you know what, sure, sometimes you just have to let people go. And I'm looking at her going, who told you that? She says, nobody, I just, you know, it just came out of me, I don't know. So, and it was really interesting because I was, I suppose I'm going through a few things around relationships with people I've been very close to. And, you know, a
prisoner. Yeah, welcome to Round.
And I thought, oh my gosh, there is the voice of wisdom. So,
yeah.
6.5 years of age, and I thought.
Sometimes you have to let people go.
And then she just went back into film, and it was like as if it just came through her. It was just extraordinary, you know. So I thought, I needed to hear that.
From the mouths of babes. Okay, so now we'll do our meditation. I think maybe I make this announcement. You know our friend Sinead O'Connor, Hush Yoga, the one who's the yoga teacher, she comes here a lot. Sinead wants me to announce that on Saturday, April 17th, Sinead will be doing a yoga asana philosophy and meditation workshop, a unique chance to fill the gap we often miss with yoga asana postures, because Drew Lawrence will be there to join us to fill our spiritual desires with his wisdom and knowledge, whoever this guy is.
Yes.
Sinead will begin this workshop deepening a yoga practice by focusing on hip openers. You need to open your hips. After a short lunch break, Drew will join us for a discussion on yoga philosophy and meditation. And that is 17th of April from 11 to 1 is the yoga part, and from 1:30 to 3:30 is moi. And that's at Hush Yoga. She's got a new place that I haven't been to, but it's in City Center. So if you want information on that, it's Hush Yoga. Okay, so she would have a website and everything. All right, let's meditate. Close your eyes. Breathe, relax, and let go. Deeply, deeply relax, and let go. Allow the stress, tension, fear, and apprehension to drain from your body. Totally, completely relax, breathe, and let go. High above, coming down from the heavens, envision a beautiful beam of radiant, pearl-white light coming down, down, all the way down, entering through the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms, legs, out the bottom of your feet into the earth below. Breathe, relax, and let go. Deeply relax and let go. All right. You're in a large clearing in a forest, and the clearing, which is covered in grass, is exactly square in shape. You are standing in the very center of the clearing, right in the middle, and you're facing east. Now, coming out from your body is some fragment of yourself, some quality coming out of you, taking maybe exactly the same form as you. Maybe a different form entirely. Maybe the form of another human. Maybe an animal form. Could be any form. So this aspect of you comes out of you. There it is. What does it look like? What form is it? Where does it go? In which of the four corners does it belong? And what is the quality symbolized by this form? What quality, what part of your nature, what is this form symbolized for you? Something simple, not complex. What does it represent? And where do you put it? Which corner? Okay, focus in again on yourself and allow the next aspect of yourself to come out. this second aspect comes out in what form? And what is the symbolism of this aspect? What quality or function or nature of you, what part of you does it embody? Where do you put it? Which corner of the clearing? Now, the third aspect comes out of you. What is the shape or form this third aspect takes? What does it symbolize for you? And where do you place it? Which corner of the clearing? And finally, the fourth aspect comes out of you. What form does it take? And what does it represent for you? And obviously, there is only one corner remaining, so that's where it must go. Now you must determine which of these qualities or aspects you want to keep, which you want to get rid of, let go of, and which you want to transmute, to transform. Look at the first aspect that came out. What do you want to do with this? Keep it, get rid of it, or transmute it? Do it, whatever your decision is. Look at the second aspect. Will you keep it? Will you get rid of it? Or will you transmute it? Do that. Do the same with the third aspect and the fourth in your own time. Continue until you've finished keeping, discarding, or transmuting. The ones that you have kept and transmuted, those aspects, reintegrate those now back into yourself. The one that you have discarded, what will you do with it? How will you discard it? What will happen to it? Finish those steps. All right. When you're finished, slowly return to consciousness, awakening, feeling refreshed, relaxed, and at peace. Anybody? Oh, come on.
I couldn't get any pictures of anything.
No?
Just myself standing.
Did you feel anything? Did you get a sense? Sometimes people don't see, but they sense.
No, I could picture the cleared space.
Yeah.
And I was able to put myself in central earth. I think I would just need more time maybe for something. So then I just...
Yeah, do you do much meditation?
Yeah, a little bit. I did a lot for a couple of years.
Okay.
I didn't do much now. So when nothing was happening, I said, okay, what do I want to look at? So I just sort of shut myself and picked a few things.
Okay.
But nothing actually...
Yeah, this kind of meditation, you're allowing your subconscious to present you with various images and symbols. It wasn't behaving. Well, you see, the thing with this is we're not giving you really enough time to sink deeply into relaxation, because it doesn't really permit that. I mean, I could do it longer, but.
If you need to take away and do later.
Yeah, I mean, you can do any of them later.
Yeah.
Anybody else want to share the journey? Shira?
Yeah, Fadney. The first one was actually a very beautiful man, like a majestic, like a king, dressed in, it must be, I think it's probably the theme that we're in.
With the Ram, like Ram there.
An Indian sort of, all dressed in cream. But he was very majestic, beautifully dressed, but humble. There was something very humble about him.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the word? Just knowledgeable. Just knowledgeable without having to say it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So he went over to the right. And he stood in the east, and the sun was all around him, and then he moved, because the sun was actually rising in my picture. And then the second one was this, like, very playful, girly dancer, totally joyful, and, you know, just dancing and enjoying life and full of fun, playful. So she went over this place down here, and then the one in the corner over here, the next one was an eagle, like the visionary, like a...
And that's there northeast?
That was over here, yeah. But that actually got transmuted into spiritual sight. Sort of, it went kind of a higher
eagle.
Yeah.
Mm, very nice.
And then the last one was a rose, which went over here. And what I did is I actually decided to scatter it. I scattered the petals out around outside the field. And that to me represented it was love in it, love in the heart. But it was kind of time to change it, I think. Let love grow in a different way, and maybe that was that. So it's quite lovely, actually.
Excellent.
What
very nice.
What do the directions mean?
Well, you know, we were just looking at directions in terms of Vastu, and the directions are connected to planets. And from that, you know, east is the sun, south is Mars. West is Saturn, and north is Mercury. Northeast is the Jupiter, so that's the most auspicious or spiritual NK2, which is mysticism, dreams, visions. Southwest is Rahu, old stuff, generational stuff. And southeast is Venus.
Venus,
yeah. Relationships, love. Northwest is the moon, family. Hospitality. This is the northwest corner of this house, right here. It's full of people. The moon energy. It's a good place for commiserating. Sadhu Sangam. Satsang. Did I get them all?
Yeah. Did you say the northwest is the moon? The emotions.
Emotions. Okay, so we thank you for coming. You're welcome for tea and Vicky's. Are you awake still? Huh? Okay, good. So, Om Tat Sat. Hare Krishna.